All right, we'll start all over for those listening on the internet. If you're confused,
start breathing, Esther. Start
we're just for recording purposes. We're going to record it on a different in a different file. It is a little bit after 10 a.m. November 12, 2010. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting in a special meeting to deal with some matters of some urgency. And this is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk, all in attendance at today's meeting. KC1 on our regular agenda is being held over. We are in the middle of day four of a two-day hearing on another matter, and we have not had the opportunity to have either a work session or, quite frankly, even really read the proposed order. So with respect for our task, we'll hold that over until commissioners have time to review the record. So that brings us to item number TC1, Commissioner Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission deem the application complete, conditioned on receiving final turbine locations at least 1 week prior to hearing, and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in the application of Anexco Development Corporation for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a proposed 150-megawatt wind energy conversion facility in Dickey and McIntosh counties of North Dakota, case number PU08932.
Second.
This is the 150-megawatt wind farm that's being proposed, as I said, by Anexco. It is the one that is also related to Xcel or NSP's request to include this as part of their company profile. The public hearing that we're scheduling is being set for December 21st of this year, starting at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time at Teddy's Grill in Edgeley, 1101 Industrial Park.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Elite Inc.'s request for revisions to certificate of site compatibility for energy conversion facility number 15 issued to Elite on September 29, 2009 for its Bison 1 wind project in Morton and Oliver counties of North Dakota, case number PU09151.
Second.
Now, this is just a... we're noticing first an informal hearing, which we will hold, and that's scheduled for December 8th, 2010 at 1:30. We're also giving a notice of opportunity for hearing if someone instead would prefer a full hearing on the matter, and we can then schedule that if we do. If we do get any sort of request for that, requests for a formal hearing need to be received by December 13th of 2010. Basically, the previously cited wind farm that Elite is constructing is they have updated their plans for that, and basically the difference in the update is that they're requesting to modify the certificate to move one wind turbine generator approximately 215 feet and for authority to utilize a different turbine technology, which would increase the overall total generating capacity to 81.8 megawatts, and decrease the total number of turbines that are going to be located there by two, so that there would be 31 turbines. So basically, by changing turbine technology, they get more energy out of it, a couple of less sites, and they're also proposing moving one of the generators a little bit. One of the reasons that we're proposing both a hearing and an opportunity, or an informal and an opportunity for a hearing, is being that these are different technology turbines, the commission undoubtedly is going to want to have the information which would suggest that the noise level, shadow flicker, things like that will be comparable to what we had previously cited, and so we want to make sure that that is all done, and also give any landowner that might be affected in the area the opportunity to say their piece if they want us to consider anything else with the moving of the turbines.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That ends items on the regular agenda. We do have one item on administrative agenda, but why don't we take questions if Dave has a question or two first.
On the Anexco project, you said that's going to be part of Xcel's?
The Anexco project is being constructed by a company called Anexco, but it is a wind project that's being built at the request of XL Energy. And so XL has other filings in front of the commission that relate to their obligation to get, you know, certain certificates from the commission. But it's the XL wind farm in North Dakota, even though it's being constructed by NXO.
So is this XL's only that's not XL's only facility in North Dakota?
Well, they have a fairly small facility near Velva. I think it's about 14 megawatts. But this is their first sited project in North Dakota and the first one really of any size.
Are they doing it here to help meet their energy standards in Minnesota, or are they doing it for North Dakota customers?
Well, that's one of the issues that I'm sure we'll sort out
There's a relationship
time.
Here, isn't there?
Yeah, I have to think back to whether Mericourt was included in the most recent rate case. I don't believe it was. I think that was an issue that was deferred for later.
It has received an advanced determination of prudence.
It has received an ADP, but I think that's the only. And it's received a CPCN, I think, at this point, too, hasn't it?
I think so.
This is strictly on, of course, the siting of the project itself. Ultimate rate recovery would wait for a rate case, but.
Always, Dave. We're here for you.
Well, it's about the Tioga gas, the gas facility. I remember in the story of the Tribune or somebody else picked up, Commissioner Collick, you said that it appears that maybe they didn't.
Yes, when the incident took place, the local first responders, you know, were the first ones in the scene, and this is, you know, the federal jurisdictional pipeline, so the PHMSA folks were out there right away. They asked our staff to assist, so we've agreed to assist. But it didn't take long with our folks and PHMSA and local one-call just doing a quick review of the tickets, one-call tickets, and there was no one-call ticket issued. So PHMSA has the lead in the investigation, but my thought was that it appears that the one-call, failure to call one-call will at least be a contributing factor in this incident.
And what kind of penalties for not complying with the one-call?
Well, the PHMSA has the lead in the investigation, so we'll need to let that run its course. But I'll go back historically. This commission, for the first time ever, issued a violation of one call, and it was, I believe in that case, a $500 fine. And that was just a failure to do the one call ticket. It was Riley Brothers over in the eastern part of the state. So I don't remember the exact limit or the high end of it, but we'll have to just wait and see how this all unfolds.
The civil penalty for failing to make a one call prior to a dig is, I think the maximum is $5,000. It's irrelevant and insignificant compared to the accident and the results of that.
So what is the commission's role in helping with the investigation?
Our pipeline safety, Mr. Bachmeyer, is out there with the PHMSA folks. He's actually been on the job now for a while, but he's relatively new compared to some of their staff here. He's just there to assist them in whatever areas could be to learn how the investigation process goes, and just we're there to help out however we need.
So it's going to be a little time before you get the results.
PHMSA has the lead. I would imagine this will take some time. This is a significant investigation given the loss of life and two injuries.
PHMSA is
Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Office or Administration.
And I have one curiosity just because I ran across something on the wire this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Public Service Commission regulate whether or not a telephone company has to publish white pages or yellow pages?
Not anymore. I can't remember. It was probably, after the 95 session, that 93 maybe, something like that. I'm looking at Alana for confirmation or Pat. Directory services were deregulated 15 years ago or more.
The reason I ask is because in some states, they're basically, their regulatory bodies are saying, you know, that companies
right.
Can't publish white pages anymore because they're becoming increasingly irrelevant.
Yeah. Alana is saying maybe even before that, right,
yeah.
That directory services have been outside of commission authority for some time. Some states retain it. I don't know how many, but yeah, it's interesting because, of course, a big part of the impact is cell phones. And as people migrate to cell phones, those oftentimes are not picked up by directories. In fact, usually they're not. Sometimes if you port a number, I know this from personal experience, sometimes if you port your number to a cell phone, it'll remain in the directory for some period of years, but eventually it drops out. The reason that commissions originally regulated directory service was it was perceived as a value to the network. And just like a network is more valuable, the more people who are on it, the network is also more valuable if people know how to get a hold of each other on the network. And so that's why directory services, especially in the old Ma Bell monopoly days, was regulated. But and it was a source of revenue for the phone company, especially on the Yellow Pages and business listings. But, with cell phones and more people offline and harder to get a hold of, the value of the phone book is probably less to the network than it was at one time.
The listing of a wireless phone number in a directory is an opt-in option as opposed to an opt-out, of course, option. And about the only people I see that opt into any directory would be a business that, and there are a lot of those. I mean, realtors and whatnot that use their cell phones for business and they'll opt in. But for the most part, this is my personal opinion, of course, but one of the great things about wireless phones is that your phone number's not in a directory. Of course, 14,000 friends have it on their speed dial, but other than that.
Dave, if I could just throw out one more point back to the investigation from PHMSA. What's significant to me is that this just reinforces the point for all North Dakotans to call before they dig and do the 811, because no matter how this investigation turns out, I think it needs to highlight the fact that people need to call before they dig. There's a lot more things going on in North Dakota that involve digging, pipelines, power lines. So this is a fatality that perhaps could have been avoided, but no matter how the investigation turns out, call before you dig. That's my soundbite, Dave. But we tried to get this highlighted for a long time. It's hard to get people engaged in it.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Let's go right into the administrative portion of the meeting, and we have one agenda item, and that is the filing of reply comments in the FERC docket that we received, I guess, some comments or a draft on Tuesday, Jerry, and you've been working on it, and we all have seen them, and perhaps you and or Tony have some thoughts.
Kind of showy, right?
Tony doesn't have any thoughts.
Where do I sign?
In addition, if you've seen in my email, I've been visiting with South Dakota staff, and maybe South Dakota would like to join in the comments with us.
When's the deadline again, Jerry?
It's today, but
I guarantee I didn't see it in your email is like number 375 of 457 that I haven't gotten.
It's today, but I don't think it's a big deal if we file late, and it'll have to be late if South Dakota is going to join with us because they haven't got a chance to talk to their commissioners about it and see if they want to do it.
Their commissioners don't do whatever you tell them to?
Well, there's a possibility.
They do whatever Greg tells them.
Yeah, actually, Greg's going to talk to them.
I bet he is. Okay.
And so if you guys would want to wait for South Dakota and then we would file
them. Is not any problem with filing late, I would prefer doing that. But if it disadvantages us somehow, I don't mind talking it over right now either.
Okay, I don't.
Well, we realize that our utilities, especially Otter Tail, has a concern that they want to have expressed in the docket, and we certainly want to respond to that if it's appropriate. But if we can have some time to review it to make sure we know what we're saying, that would be helpful.
Is there a real advantage whether they get both comments or the comments that say the same thing at different times?
I think that if they are going to say the same thing.
Right, so is there a real advantage for us?
I think if they get it a little bit late, they're more likely to read it, to be honest with you.
See, that's a common strategy.
Can they take it into consideration if it's late? I mean, that's the...
Dave, because we're state commissions, it seems like they always give the state commissions leeway on some of these things. Otter Tail thought that there wouldn't be a problem if it was late.
What's that?
I say Joanne thought there wouldn't be a problem if it was late.
How late?
whenever we can get it together with South Dakota. I'd say probably after we get back from NARUC at this point then.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm wondering, because it's likely not to happen until the
Let's
earliest
file it, Jerry.
Late next week.
Yeah,
the comments.
We were talking within the month or so after they were, as just a general term of it being okay.
I mean, I agree with Brian. If we know what we want to do, let's do it now if it's ready to go. But describe the issue, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. We actually talked about this before back in Scott Hempling's class.
Right.
And the issue is the right of first refusal to build transmission. Right now, the TOs have an obligation to build transmission. If it makes it into Appendix A and it's in their service area, they have a contractual obligation with MISO to build it.
Right.
And in return for that obligation to build, they also should have the right to be the first ones to build it, to do it. And in the NOPR, they talked about coming up with some kind of a competitive bidding mechanism or some other way to determine who is going to do the building.
Mm-hmm.
And
thanks, Dave.
What these comments basically say is that we should stay with what we have arranged with the transmission owners doing their own building at this point.
Now, I understand that this is taking sides in a, you know, amongst a number of players. There are going to be independent transmission companies who would disagree with that, right? I mean,
yeah. We're
talking about ATC, ITC.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest advantage for an Autotel customer?
ATC and ITC are transmission owners. They would be doing their own building under the present situation.
Right, but to the degree they want to enter a new market in which they're not the incumbent.
I don't know where ATC and ITC come out on this, but I would guess that they come out on keeping their right of first refusal.
I was thinking that they might be more interested. if they're looking at building transmission in their non-traditional service territory, right. Well, doesn't this proposal disadvantage companies like that?
It might. If they're going to develop elsewhere, it might.
Isn't that a big part of their
business
model right now?
Express is all about building elsewhere, right?
But it just means that the company has the right to do it themselves. If they can't, it'll just roll back up, I would assume. Right?
What's the benefit for consumers either way? I mean, do consumers potentially benefit from having a competitive bidding process under which
that
various transmission?
That is the question.
Is Ottertail's concern primarily, refresh my memory, is it primarily an operational concern? That, you know, they sort of know the territory and then therefore they should have the right of first refusal? Or
they do the planning for this. It's their system. They do the planning for it and they build it. For instance, in the MDU situation down here at Ellendale, that substation was built by the wind developer, and MDU thinks they didn't build it to their needs, and so they're going to have to put more money into it to build it right, and then they also feel that the developer spent about twice as much as they should have to build it and things like that. So those kind of issues can...
Right, but that's under the existing rules. So how does the right of first refusal affect that?
Had this right of first refusal...
I don't think this would have made any difference in that case. I'm just saying that those are some of the issues that come up with third-party building.
Yeah.
Is it might impact the existing system in ways that...
Well, they still have to go through the same modeling and so forth to try and ensure that it doesn't, but the TOs is their system. In my mind, they should be the ones doing having the building in it and owning the system and things like that. There was
the idea from FERC though is what, that by opening it up, it might allow more prospective transmission owners into the process. It might spur greater development. It might spur existing utilities too.
I think they're more worried about fairness, that they want anybody to be
Ernest,
able to
come
in.
Ernest, from whose viewpoint?
And build the thing. As is now, they feel that there's an undue preference to the transmission owners for building.
Yeah. You know, my snap reaction is this is a bigger issue than making a decision right here.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one thing when there's some clear identified case that we've all been informed of that's a potential harm to the ratepayers. It's a little different when it's you've got our existing utility companies who. I mean, I understand their position, but there's another position out there as well, and we've. You know, because of their relationship with the commission, because they do business with us a lot, they have the opportunity to come in and kind of plead the case and say, hey, will you, sign on to this? We think it's a good idea. But we haven't heard from any of the other, we haven't heard the other side of the story yet. And I think when we sign our name to FERC filings, we owe it to ourselves and everyone else to at least hear the other side.
Or they owe it to come to us before the deadlines are to give us their side. That would be right. Otter Tail's come to us. They want us to file some paperwork. We've looked through it. If the deadline is today and it can't be extended, we need to make a decision. If we don't do it, that's a decision. And yeah. So, I mean, it's incumbent on those folks to come to Jerry and us before the deadline is that they want us to do something, too.
Yeah, so, but, of course, doing nothing is the neutral position. And right. So until there's a there's a proactive...
But Otter Tail has approached us on this.
Right.
So that they are proactive, would like us to make a decision. Right. So if we say we don't do anything, that is a decision to them.
Yeah, and Minnesota filed some comments before already supporting that we keep the right of first refusal.
As OMS?
Yes, OMS. And OMS comments... kind of went both ways.
So there are states on different sides of this issue.
Yeah, the eastern states where they've restructured and stuff like that, some of those were more apt to want to let third parties build.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the vertically integrated states were more along the lines of wanting their regulated companies to do it so that they have some control over the transmission grid more.
Okay. Well, given all this, my recommendation would be to sit for now neutral. But, if we're talking about we've got up to a month to potentially put in some late-filed comments, let's take advantage of that time. And if we need to schedule an informal or a work session to give folks the opportunity to tell us directly their concerns on either side, then we can do that. And maybe then they give South Dakota the time to catch up, too, and we can file them joint. But I guess I'd be uncomfortable pulling the trigger on this today without more information.
Okay.
Let me ask you this, Chair. Will you get a definite answer today if they'll take late comments?
No.
No, I don't think we have a definite answer, but the FERC, if they get it from us before they make their decision... they're pretty lenient with states.
Our standing with FERC is pretty solid.
Yeah. And especially if South Dakota were to join. I mean, then there's two states on the deal.
Let me ask you this direct question. If one commissioner signs it, sends it in today, is there any value to that at all if the whole commission's not with it? Like if I'd sign that today and send it in, is there really any value to that unless the whole commission weighs in?
I don't know. Actually, I was thinking along the lines we would just have counsel sign them. And
probably we've got counsel in this hearing here today.
They're looking for something else to do.
My own sort of political counsel would be, if you feel strongly about it, it might not be advantageous to have one commissioner sign because it implies that two are actually opposed to that, which isn't the case. It's just that, at least in my case, I just want to hear both sides.
All right, I'm sold, Jerry. We'll do it all together. Just we'll wait and see.
I could try and do something on the 24th for informal if you'd like. I don't know who we could hear besides Otter Tail at that point.
Well.
At least
have their opportunity.
Yeah. I guess I just don't like
it. Call in and they can.
The more things we sit in the fence between federal and state authority, I see where this is going.
And then that give you a chance to, I know you haven't had a chance to read these comments either. That's too much.
I read them last night, and I didn't see anything crazy on them.
Okay.
But there's another transmission company that might see it all crazy. You know, that's
well, but they haven't come to me prior to this time today. I mean, that's why we probably should have a work session.
That's the problem. I mean, they would argue, well, we haven't had the opportunity.
Exactly. You get in more trouble for lack of due process than
these big companies don't have. They have plenty of opportunity to come to us. It's not like they don't know how to get in front of us.
Then they would argue that companies that have 4-day hearings in front of you have a lot more access, and that's the problem. And we're a major export state, and we have a responsibility to that part of our economy.
So should I put it on the 24th?
I think that's a good
idea. That's a good idea. All right, if there's nothing else, we'll close the meeting. Patrick, tell me. Hold on. Well, yes. Do you want to add something?
I was just wondering if you want to schedule anything.
When's our next meeting?
24th. Yeah, Wednesday before Turkey Day. We don't have any informals that day.
We canceled it.
Yep.
Oh.
It's Thanksgiving. People have to go places.
I'm going to call in.
You're going to call in?
I'm not calling in.
You're asking, do we want a work session or something?
Work session, or do you want a special meeting, or do you want to schedule anything at all? Might be time to do it if you have a thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I can't say that I actually have to have a work session.
I don't know that I do either. I just have to have time to read the order.
Right.
So then the question becomes...
You know where I'm at, Pat. Just give it some time.
Let's put it on the agenda for the 24th to vote on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
close the meeting. We'll